must tell from the very beginning that I belong to the mathematical side of this audience. So for me to understand something means almost the same as to prove something. So what I'm going to tell you today is work in progress, joint work in progress, with Fedya Nazarov about model. Spherical harmonics for me, as all people here, there are two ways to define them, either as a traces of homogeneous harmonic polynomials in Rn in the union sphere, and we fix the degree of harmonic polynomial, the degree is n, so we get a linear space of spherical harmonics of degree n. Simple counting says that the dimension of this linear space, which the space I denote by Hn, is 2n plus 1. And there is another way to characterize the space. These are exactly eigenfunctions of classical Laplace Beltrami, which is a spherical part of the Laplacian, with the eigenvalue minus n times n plus 1. And these are equivalent ways of defining the space. So we will consider Hn is always equipped with a scalar product inherited from L2 on the sphere with respect to the area. So by the norm, I always denote a L2 norm on the sphere. Sometimes when I use scalar product, it will be scalar product in that sense. And a very classical object, which was object of study of many physicists and many mathematicians, is the zero set of a spherical harmonic, which I denote by Z of F. And by nodal domain, from a symmetrical point of view, it's not domain because the set is not connected with all. By nodal domain, we call connected component of the complement, so these are connected sets where the function does not vanish. And the quality we are interested in, the quantity we are interested in is the number of connected component of the zero set, or if we don't have crossings, if zero is not a singular value, then up to one, this is the same as a number of nodal domains. Let me show you. There are plenty of pictures which I'm sure you have seen. I took one from this is a model set for spherical harmonic of degree n, of degree 10, and this is a model set of spherical harmonic of degree 21. And there are a lot of attempts to understand to understand what do we see on these pictures, and how many components we have, what is the size of these components. And not too many things are known about them. So first of all, there is a classical current model domain theorem, which is a version of variational principle, which says that the number of components does not exceed n plus 1 square, and this is a very, very general fact, which is true for any eigenfunctions of any Laplace-Beltrami operator. For me, in what I'm going to tell you, for me, the essential is just an upper bound that n of f cannot grow faster than constant times n square. For me, it's not essential which constant we have. There is a very nice example of Hans Levy of spherical harmonics of even degree, which have two components, and spherical harmonics of odd degree, which have only three components. So this means that you do not have a lower bound for this number. And the question I'm interested in, what is a typical behavior? So first of all, let me specify the word typical. No. For me, okay. No. Harmonic polynomial is, for me, is a real harmonic polynomial. And I consider only real spherical harmonics. So this is a real linear space of dimension 2 n plus 1. Yeah. I'm interested in lines, not in points. For points, these things are much simpler. I'm interested in lines. So first of all, what is a typical? The most natural way is to consider Gaussian spherical harmonics. So in language of Scott's talk, we just put Gaussian on our Hilbert space HN. So formally, we choose any orthonormal basis. This construction does not depend on the choice of the basis, and consider linear combinations of with independent Gaussian coefficients. I want the norm to be 1. It doesn't matter for me, but anyway, it's simpler for me to have the norm 1. That's why I take variance 1 over 2 n plus 1. But of course, if you multiply everything by n plus 1, we do not change the picture. As I told you, this construction, because of invariance of Gaussian law, does not depend on the choice of the basis. So what we define as something built over our Hilbert space, finite dimensional Hilbert space, HN. And another very important feature is that, of course, the distribution of this function is rotational. So the zero level equation here is so now n of f is a random variable, the number of nodal components, the number of components, and the zero level equation is whether it grows like n square, like lower, or it has a smaller growth when n goes to infinity, or it grows like something which it has a smaller growth. This equation grows many times in many different instances. So people in electrical engineering were interested in this equation already in the beginning of the 60s. There is a thing called statistical topography. People were interested in it. You may consider this equation as a kind of the simplest equation of statistical algebraic geometry. That we may ask the same question, not about spherical harmonics, but for random trigonometric polynomials. And more or less, the question has the same difficulty. There is no big difference in the problem. And maybe recently, 5 or 6 years ago, there was a new wave of interest to this equation because of relation to quantum chaos. And in fact, I know only two attempts to treat this question. This question is very difficult. Why equations of that sort? Why they are difficult? Because there is no formula for the number of components. If you are interested in the length of the nodal of the zero set, then there is a famous Katz-Rice formula, which you can use, and then at least you can make the first step. You can reduce the equation to computations of Gaussian integrals. If you are lucky, you can compute, if you or estimate or make some asymptotics. The same will be if you consider spherical harmonics and complex harmonics and consider zero set. Again, you can compute the number using Katz-Rice device. But when it comes to number of nodal components, which is a kind of topological complexity, you do not have a formula, just because if you have two points on the sphere, you don't have a good mean to check whether they belong to the same component. This is a not local question. So that's why this equation, from my point of view, is very interesting. Let me show you one picture. And you can ask more or less similar question for other Gaussian functions. This picture is taken from paper by Schmidt. These are how local domains look like. The first attempt was done by Sperling, who was trained as a mathematician, but he was a famous in radar, theory of radars and electrical engineering. And he gave an estimate lower bound for the number of components, but what he did could be justified mathematically completely, but his device works only for level sets with in non-critical case. So if you have, if instead of zero lines, you consider level sets where the function equals some constant C and C is positive or negative, then you can produce a lower bound and you can see that it indeed, number of components, it indeed grows like n squared. But the way he argued, I don't want to discuss it here, completely his estimate blows up when the level goes to zero and it cannot give anything for zero sets. The other example, another treatment was done by Bogomolin and Schmidt, and it's very beautiful, but unfortunately, I cannot see how to justify. So this was their argument. So let us first think about, let us start with completely unrealistic. Let us suppose that we have a checkbook, that our nodal portrait is a checkboard. When using Katz Rice device, you can compute mean number of, if you, since you know the length, you can compute the sides. So let us think that we have plenty of, that zero is a singular value, that we have plenty of intersections, which cannot happen in the random case. And now, in each intersection, let us flip a coin. So we have this kind of intersection. So in each intersection, let us flip independently a coin, and with probability 1/2, let us replace this intersection with this picture, and with probability 1/2 with that picture. So after this, you will come to percolation-like model. So you will come to something like that. And after the first step is the most difficult step in my understanding, at least to rigorize. I do not see any ways because we have correlations. Our model is not independent. On the wavelength scale, typical size of the nodal domain is like, this distance is like 1/n. On this scale, we have strong correlations. They are not small, and there are no ways to justify it, at least mathematically.
So, how could instead of a finite sum putting
an equal minus lambda? I will come to this. You mean random plane waves? Yes, I will come to you. This is a scaling limit of the field.
So this is a scaling limit.
Okay.
This is a question. One thing is, in general, these pictures will contain closed groups.
Yes.
Like this.
Yes. This is just a... Yes.
And the other is that this model of choosing to go either this way or this way actually is one population.
Yes. So after that, they used some things which, after reduction to such picture, what they use, some things are already justified, some things from a mathematical point of view are still not proven, but I believe quite soon we will know. Well, everything about this, but for their model, just the first step is the main problem. Why you can do this? Anyway, they got very good agreement with numerics, but somehow this is still a heuristic. So after this, I should be quite cautious because I'm a little bit afraid that I will not get reimbursement. Just because what I'm going to tell you after this is completely orthogonal to the main mainstream, to the mainstream of this meeting, of this event. So what we did, so we still have no idea. Our original hope was to find the justification for this procedure, and we have no idea how to do this. On the other hand, we learned how to prove some things, but by some classical means of analysis and some simple some things from probability theory and geometry, we do not use any mathematics related to this workshop. And here are disadvantages, but also good things. Good things that I strongly believe that what we proved worked for in much more general setup. Some things can be done for functions of more than two variables where you cannot use this model. So somehow our approach is simple and rough, but it seems to me more general, so at least there are some advantages. So here is the main result. So the theorem says that indeed n of mean number of component grows like n squared, but it says much more. It says that there is exponential concentration, that m over f over n squared, when n goes to infinity, tends a limit, to a positive limit a, and there is an exponential concentration around the mean, that for each epsilon, the probability that the number of nodal components over n squared differs from a more than an epsilon, decays exponentially with m when n goes to infinity. This is what we but this is just a disadvantage of the proof. But anyway, before this, then it was even not known why n of f grows like n squared. So
this is in the original. This n of f is for the original spherical harmonics.
Yes, for original spherical harmonics. But I believe that this works also for multidimensional spherical harmonics, for random trigonometric polynomials of many variables. So I will try to sketch the proof, and you will see that the proof is very robust. We do not use anything. Roughly speaking, we use only inequalities. We do not use identities in the proof. So, Bogomolny and Schmidt prediction suggests that this secret constant A is some small number, like 0.06. And as I told you, unfortunately, our proof gives epsilon to the power 15. Probably there is a room to improve this, but at this stage, we can probably one because their prediction says that the variance is also like n squared. So I think the correct scaling. So for the rest of my talk, I'm going to explain you the main ideas in the proof, because I think there are some interesting steps, and maybe in the end I will stop on some questions which we cannot answer, which is so the proof consists of three steps, and they are more or less independent. First of all, the first step is the most simplest one, and this is still a mystery for me why people couldn't do this earlier, because in the end it appears quite simple. This is just an lower bound, that the mean number of components is bounded by some numerical constant times n squared. The second step is the exponential concentration of this one random variable around its median, and there we use something which is called Levy concentration phenomena. I will try to explain it, which people use quite often in many different instances. And the third step is existence of the limit. After we have exponential concentration, it doesn't matter to we deal with median or with mean. And so the third step is to explain why we have a limit when n goes. So let me start with the first step. And here, in the first step, the main trick is existence of a barrier. So by barrier, I mean the following things. This is our sphere. Here is a disk of size. Characteristic scale is 1 over n. This is wavelength, 1 over square root of lambda. So by barrier, I mean a function which is large positive, like square root of n. In the center of this disk, large negative on the circumference, on the boundary of this disk, and still has a L2 monomer. So I claim that the barrier exists. And this is indeed quite simple. You should, if our point X is a northern pole, then this is just the zonal spherical harmonic. You should take normalized Legendre polynomials and use some classical 19th century asymptotics. So you see, I was wrong when I said that we don't use equations. So we do use equations. And in other cases, you need just to rotate and you get something. You can get the barrier also for different other models, for algebraic trigonometric models. So now, if we already know that we have a barrier, the rest is very simple. Let us pack. Disjoint disks of that size on the sphere. So the size of the disk is like constant over n, so we can pack like n square disjoint disks on the sphere, and xj are the centers of this, xj's are the centers of these disks, and for each disk, let us consider. For each disk, let us consider the event that our Gaussian spherical harmonics is positive, large but with numerical C0, positive in the center of this disk, and negative on the boundary circumference of this small disk.
So I'm slightly confused. Yes. This barrier is an event, probably.
No, barrier is deterministic thing. I just say that in our linear space, over this linear space we build Gaussian function, that for each point on the sphere we have some function in our linear space which gives us a barrier. This completely deterministic thing, there is no probability here. On that slide, there is no probability. Probability starts here. After I pack, deterministically, I pack something like n squared disks. Then, for each disk, I consider this event. F now is a Gaussian spherical harmonic. F is a random function. C naught is a large positive numerical function. So now, trivially, if this event happens, then we have a component inside our small disk. So the total number of the disks or of the components is bounded from below by the number of times the event occurs. So expectation is bounded by expectation of that event, but this is just sum of the probabilities of this event, of this event's combination. Right, so we need to estimate from below the probability of each of these events. So I skip technical details, but the idea is very simple now. Let us consider, so let us, our Gaussian function does not depend on the choice of the basis. So let us include the barrier as a first element, as a first basis function. The norm is one, so we can just start the basis with the barrier. And let us denote by fj the Gaussian function which is built over orthogonal complement to this function. This function is not already spherical invariant, rotation invariant, but anyway, it's not difficult to estimate. Then the Gaussian, our Gaussian function f is psi naught is our random, is our Gaussian coefficient with variance 1 over 2n times the barrier plus fj. So now, after this, estimating this Gaussian fj from above, and technically it's not difficult to estimate it from above, we see that with positive probability, this function cannot destroy the barrier which we already built. This was a size of positive, like square root of n. This is a size of 1 over square root of n. So with positive probability, the barrier cannot be destroyed. So this means that the probability that we have a barrier is bounded from below by some numerical things. Everything is rotational invariant, so the total number of terms here is like n squared. So this is this. And you see that this is a very general construction. That's why I was a little bit afraid about reimbursement, that it has nothing in common with the mainstream of. So now, this was the first part of the proof. This is how we get the lower bound. Now about exponential concentration. So first of all, I recall here on the slide the definition of the median, but I suppose everyone here knows what is the median. And now let me probably start with some philosophy. It would be great if the nodal portrait of a function would be continuous graph, if it would be stable under the conditions. Unfortunately, this is not so. But we know that if we perturb a little bit the function, then the nodal portrait can be changed drastically. But fortunately, we know our enemies. The enemies are small critical values. If we know that critical values of our function, local maxima, minima, and saddle points lie sufficiently high, then after we take small smooth perturbation, we cannot change the nodal portrait of a function. So how to justify this? To justify this, we prove the following lemma, which I think is of independent interest, and it's also quite general thing. This lemma says that there is a set of small measure of unstable spherical harmonics. Unstable spherical harmonics, I will explain in which sense they are unstable. They have, this is exceptional set E, and it has exponentially small measure, exponentially small probability. But if our spherical random spherical harmonic is stable, then the small, even L2 perturbation does not change much the nodal portrait of the function. So formally, the lemma says that for every positive epsilon, there exists rho and exceptional set of spherical harmonics of exponentially small probability. So such that for any non-exceptional spherical harmonic and for any spherical harmonic with L2 norm less than rho, the number of components for the sum minus the number of components for F differs not more than epsilon n squared. So this is continuity outside of exceptional set of spherical harmonics. And now let me explain the idea which is behind this theorem. The idea is a classical isoperimetric inequality, which is a cousin of Levine isoperimetric lemma, which is called Borel-Sudakov series of Gaussian isoperimetric inequality. It was proved in 74 by Sudakov and Sillinson, and then independently by 75. And the lemma, the isoperimetry says the following. So suppose we have a finite dimensional Euclidean space with a Gaussian measure. And we want to consider the following problem. And by for any set F, for any measurable, for any measurable set F, by F plus rho, let us consider rho neighborhood of this set. And let us consider the following isoperimetric problem. So let us fix the Gaussian measure of rho neighborhood, and let us maximize the measure of the set itself. Or alternatively, we can fix the measure of the set and minimize the measure of rho neighborhood. So which sets are extremal? The answer is that extremal sets are affine subspaces. So this is what is called inequality, and it is very close to, it can be, there are plenty of proofs these days, and one of the proofs, their original proof, they get it from Levy isoperimetric inequality on this field. But these days there are plenty. And from this, you can get very strong fact, which these days used a lot, not only in mathematics, but also in statistical physics, I think, which is called Levy concentration. And this fact says that in our setup, if we have a measurable set of spherical harmonics, and if we know that the measure of its rho neighborhood is less than, say, 3 over 4, then the measure of original set is exponential. Then fixed neighborhood, if our set didn't have exponentially small measures, then fixed neighborhood should be almost the whole set of spherical harmonics.
So, if C
Maybe epsilon square. Probably you're right. Probably it's not. Okay, Peter, I cannot answer. So the only hint for the right scale can be extracted if to believe to Bogomolny Schmidt prediction, and they do believe into their predictions. So the right scale can be extracted only from the fact that the variance is like n squared. So we can make computation of that. After the talk, they also predict that.
But there are different
possibilities. One is Gaussian. No, in this you see, if you consider, if you want to have this.
Well,
it depends. The Gaussian and BMO, they work on different scales themselves. So if you want the difference for the number of components over n squared minus a to be of very small size, like 1 over n, then the Gaussian works. If you want to be this in the constant size, then I think it's BMO scale. So this is at least my feeling, but I can.
Okay. But if, I mean, if your variance was more like n squared,
yeah,
then you need epsilon squared.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes. So now, if we have this Levy concentration, then this lemma, together with Levy concentration, immediately gives the exponential concentration for the number of components. So we argue like this. This is quite standard argument. So let us fix epsilon, and let us consider a set of spherical harmonics for which, say, we have number of components is larger than a n plus epsilon times n squared. Suppose that our spherical harmonic in this set was not exceptional. So let us take raw neighborhood. After we take a raw neighborhood, because of the lemma, the number of components for the function in raw neighborhood over n squared is still larger than a n, because the difference is not more than n. So by the definition of the median, a n is the median, the probability, the measure of this set cannot exceed 1/2. So by Levy concentration, the measure of original set is exponentially small. Here we didn't take into account exceptional set, but exceptional set is still exponentially small. So both together are exponentially small. And in the same way you argue for the moment. So this part is more or less standard consequence of the concentration and of this. Now, let me tell you a few words about the idea how we get the lemma, because this is the central point. As I told you, if the function has small critical values, has no small critical values, then its model portrait is stable under C1 perturbation. So first of all, we need to define exceptional set, functions which are not stable. So we argue like this. We cover the sphere. We fix a very large numerical rho. And we cover this, which will depend on epsilon in our lemma. And we cover the set, the sphere, by approximately n squared over rho squared disks of radii like r over n, 3r over n. And we cover with bounded multiplicity of covering. Each point is contained not more than 100 signatures. This is all this. Then we fix a small positive alpha. And we call a disk stable if our function and its gradient is scaled, has another scale. So when we deal with gradient, we have to divide by n, because our disks have size 1 over n. So if the function and gradient cannot be simultaneously small in our disk, in the disk. So this means if the function is small, if the function is less than 2 alpha, then the gradient must be larger than 2 alpha n. Or if the gradient is small, if our value is near critical in the sense of Yomgen, then the function should be large. So the disk is called stable if we have this. Otherwise, the disk is called unstable. And then we count how many stable disks we have. So the function is exceptional if we have too many unstable disks. Otherwise, the function is normal. So this is the definition of, this is probably the main point, this is the definition of exceptional set, of exceptional functions with unstable nodal portrait. And then, first of all, we need to show that the set of exceptional functions still has exponentially small measure. For this is curiously enough, but I completely skip this step, we again use Levy concentration. So Levy concentration used twice. First in the deduction of the main result from the lemma, and second time in the estimate of the probability of the exceptional circumstances. Okay, but the rest of the argument is not difficult. So let us consider a component of our zero set. Choose the disk of three times smaller disk it intersects. First of all, we can discard long components, components with large diameter. It is possible because we have a very simple upper bound for the length of the nodal line. So the number of components, the number of components with large diameter cannot be large. So we forget about these components. Then we discard components with that lie in unstable disks. Because our function is not exceptional, we don't have too many unstable disks. And area of each nodal domain, this is also a form of variational principle, cannot be smaller than C over N square. So unstable disks cannot contain too many components. So everything is ready for the proof. And now let us make a perturbation. So G is a function with a small L2 norm. For spherical harmonics, we have, I don't know, sometimes they're called Bernstein estimates, sometimes. It's like Cauchy inequalities for derivatives of analytic function. So if L2 norm is small, we can apply estimates on the scale constant over n. And then on the most of stable disks, this quantity function plus scale gradient is also small. And now we are in the situation which we started, which is good for us. The disk is stable. The perturbation on this disk is unstable. So in this disk, we cannot change, by perturbation, we cannot change the model. This is the idea for the proof. Do I have 5 minutes? Can you? Four. Okay, maybe I will tell you. Just I want to finish with 2 things. First, I want to tell you very briefly how we get the limit. So I explained exponential concentration, but still I didn't explain why the mean converges when n goes to infinity. And here we argue as follows. So we just come to scaling limit. So it will be convenient for me to denote the spherical harmonic by Fn instead of F. And let us consider the covariant. This is the same as a reproducing kernel in our Hilbert space. Covariance of our random function. So this is the sum, and this is also, again, you see that I do use equations. This is Legendre polynomial from cosine of difference on the sphere between points x and y. And then there is a classical, also 19th century asymptotics, that if you are on the wavelength scale, if you are doing this rescaling, then the kernel, which is Legendre polynomial, converges to the Bessel function, of the zero Bessel function of the difference between the points. What is the meaning of this rescaling? This is probably what Peter wanted to ask me before. What asked me is, what is the meaning of Bessel function? Bessel function is the limiting kernel, is a reproducing kernel, or in the probabilistic language is covariance for the limiting Hilbert space. So what is the limiting Hilbert space? We should start with L2 densities on the unit circumference, which I denote by A. We need this positivity condition to ensure that the Fourier transform will be real value. So we consider the Fourier transforms of these densities with the scalar product inherited from the unit circumference. These Fourier transforms are nothing but plane waves, because after this rescaling, eigenvalue is 1. So we get, or maybe I lost 4 pi. So we get infinite dimensional Hilbert space And we again can consider Gaussian in the sense what explained to us in his talk over limiting space. So F is a Gaussian function built over the space, so this is Gaussian plane wave. And after this, because of the convergence of covariances, we can treat on the wavelength scale, we can treat the spherical harmonic as a small perturbation of the limiting Gaussian function, if sufficient. So this means, because of stability lemma, this allows us to go to the limit. This, in fact, we need only to show, since I'm a mathematician, it's enough for me to show that AM is a Cauchy sequence, and from here you can easily get that it's a Cauchy sequence, but simultaneously you get interpretation of the secret number A in terms of the scaling D, which is obvious in which is. And maybe in the last two minutes, I will just tell you about several things we can look at. So let me summarize first. So more or less, I can put in that way, that we achieve some understanding what happens on the scale 1 over n. At least something we can do on the scale 1 over n. But unfortunately, and means which we used are rather robust, and there is a hope that it can be used in many different models in any dimension. But unfortunately, we cannot do anything beyond this scale. So there are two simplest equations which are even not zero level equations, probably minus one level equations, which we cannot answer. And maybe people here. Okay, from point of view of Bogomolny-Schmidt model, these questions are trivial. If you allow to yourself to start with what they did, then you shouldn't consider these questions. So these are questions. So it's forbidden to use the device. So the first question is about sub-critical level. So let us fix a positive epsilon. And let us consider the set of X on the sphere, where our random harmonic is minus as much as the minus. Epsilon is arbitrary small. So definitely all of us believe that with very high probability this case of the diameter. No, this case of if epsilon is sufficiently large, it's not difficult to prove. But we have no idea how to prove this for any positive epsilon. And the second question, so this is the first question, which is trivial from the point of view of the conditions. And the second question is, let us fix a T, which is larger than our scale, and let us try to compute the number of components of T of F of diameter, we'll say between T over 2 and 2T. Let us go beyond our scale. So let us take expectation and what this is. Whether it behaves like. So what we did, what follows from what I told you, if T is like 1 over n, then it behaves like n squared. But whether it's true that it was always like T to the power minus. You see on the circle it was yes, but I don't think this will be very I'm not sure that